This is The Producers, a podcast. The biggest names in audio production, station sound, radio imaging, branding, and voiceover. Interviews, tips, tricks, advice. To be a part of the show, visit RyanOnTheRadio.com. Now, The Producers with Ryan Dreen.
Here we go. I believe this would be episode 39. There it is, 39. By the way, the effects I used to make this intro and a wig is the voice. I've had people still ask me, who is that voice? She's awesome. Yes, she is awesome. She was guest, I don't know, 6 or 7. I can't remember now. There's been a lot of these episodes. My brain is pretty much mush to begin with. Anyway, Anne DeWig's the voice. Robert Dudzik in his Dave Fox signature stuff on his Trinity HD effects. Trinity's been around a long time. The Dave Fox stuff is very recent. Anyway, I use that to produce those intros. People have asked me that as well. I haven't mentioned it in a couple episodes. Also, I just heard his stuff in use, high quality. I thought it sounded great. On, what was I listening to? Something really weird. Oh, it was weird medicine imaging on the virus, the Opie and Anthony channel, the virus on Sirius XM. I actually am not positive who would have produced that, though. I know a few of the guys that are producing over at Sirius XM, but there's a chance they had one of the younger interny type guys or one of the production assistants do that show's imaging. It sounded great. So anyway, just to let you know, that stuff is everywhere. It's really good. But we'll move on. We'll get into this episode. Let me just preview what's coming up real quick because it's kind of exciting. I have the same kind of heroes as everybody. Seems like really there's about 3 or 4 different names that are thrown around every single week or every single month that I do an episode. But one of the guys I looked up to when I was just barely getting into radio, I was doing college radio and at Colorado State in Fort Collins, and I would listen to The Peak in Denver. Mike Crank was imaging The Peak. He was also not really just imaging Rover's show. He was sort of a part of the comedy. And I listened to his stuff incessantly. We would record it. We would then bring it up on our own little cool edit rig and chop it up and hear what effects he used behind every single syllable of every word. And anyway, Mike Crank's a guy I kind of looked up to in the beginning, and now I get to interview the guy. Him and Trevor Shand going to do a dual-type interview. That is happening next, I would say, October-ish. I'm guessing it'll be October-ish when that comes out. It seems like every time I try and speed these episodes up, something jumps in front of me. So I'm not going to promise that these things will come out any faster than about 3 weeks to a month in between. But you can look forward to that. They've written a book called Brain Dead Creative. Phone's ringing. That's nice. It's a really cool book. It's an easy read, and I say that not as a negative because that could sound negative. I'm just saying you pick it up and you start reading. If you do what we do in this business, you're going to have difficulty putting the book down. I'll throw a link up on a blog. I'm going to post a blog. But next month, you can just look forward to we'll talk to those guys. They have an exciting imaging job. One of the best in the world, if you ask me. Best situations. Anyway, the book's really cool. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about how awesome Mike is, how what I used to do to myself when I listened to his imaging back in the area of 98-99. Yeah, so today we focus on Joe Kelly. Joe Kelly has been around a long time, and I'll be honest, yes, I'm saying he's old. No, he's experienced. And Joe is also very honest and very open, and I've been talking to him now for a couple few years as I've been a part of either subscriber or before subscriber of AV Deli, just a fan of their work. And he's told me some stories that I knew had to be in a podcast. It took me about 2 years to talk him into doing it. He doesn't really like to do the interview thing. But he wanted to make sure we focused not so much on, hey, I'm Joe and I'm awesome and here's why. He wanted to focus on techniques and advice, ways that those of us that are in-house at a radio station who may inevitably get removed from that radio station for whatever reason can go on and be successful on our own, whether it be just as a voiceover talent, whether it be as a producer or both, or, sound designer, a music creator, popcorn popper. So this interview is a little different in that respect. I also left it one long part because I thought it warranted it, but we will kick it off with a retrospective demo from Joe Kelly. It goes back to 1978, and I believe it goes up through 1992. I'm going to play a part of it here, but I will have the entire thing posted on the Joe Kelly show notes page on the website, ryanontheradio.com. Should be a link right there on the front page if you're checking out this episode, or just search Joe Kelly. You'll find everything you need to know. And then we'll round out the interview with some recent Joe Kelly production as well. So hopefully you enjoy this. I definitely enjoyed it. And here he is, Joe Kelly.
This is Linda Kimbrough in Chicago AV Studio A. What you're about to hear is some of the hottest cutting-edge production in radio.
21 years and still rocking. 102.7 WNEW-FM, New York. Kick-ass rock and roll in the loop. If you're tired of punching up a lot of talk, take it off the button and lock on Southern California's best rock. 95.5 KLOS, Los Angeles. 100.7 WMMS. 100.7 WMMS welcomes the Rolling Stones. Wednesday, September 27th at Cleveland Stadium. The Steel Wheels North American Tour. The Stones and special guest Living Color. Tickets are $28.50. Limit 6 per person. Pick them up now at Ticketron or charged by phone 524-0000 or 1-800-225-7337. When you want to rock and roll, lock it on your official Rolling Stone station. 100.7 WMMS.
The producers.
And there is the man himself, the interviewee today is Joe Kelly. He sent me that retrospective. Joe, I speak on behalf of all radio nerds everywhere. Thank you for that.
Well, you're welcome. Actually, I had nothing to do with that, but one of my guys put that together. I try to forget all that, you know.
It must be, what's it like to hear, you know, that kind of stuff, you know, going that far back? Is it, is there some bad feelings? Is there some good feelings? Is it just kind of right down the middle?
Now, the thing that I noticed the most was the dynamics of the production seemed to be, it was better than I thought it would be in terms of the way we used the effects mm-hmm. and the beds and the way we processed everything. Because that was all done in a studio with 24-track tape and you know, quarter-inch editing and analog outboard gear.
Yeah.
So I was surprised at how clean it sounded. Of course, it was kind of cheesy because we don't image that way anymore, you know.
Yeah, it's funny.
I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, it's funny how, you know, when stuff gets dated, certain aspects of it make you amazed, and then certain aspects give you that sort of like little bit of a cringe factor, like, ooh, that is 1978.
Yeah, a lot of keyboards and a lot of drum machines.
Yeah. Well, it's really cool, I know, but, you know, radio geeks listen to this, and they love that retro stuff. You know, they love to hear that. But I got, you know, we have limited time. You're a busy man. I know you said you've been flying back and forth to New York. You have a lot happening. So I kind of have three general areas that we're going to go through. We're going to start by getting just a little bit of the highlights of your background, your career, because you've been around. And then we're going to talk about AV Deli, because it's a great service. It's massive. And then we're going to spend the bulk of the interview telling kind of people your thoughts on how to survive outside of the radio station, whether you get let go or whether you want to move on to your own, or whether you want to take a job, keep a job, and then still widen your horizons and keep your hands out there. We're going to get into a lot of that. And I know that was one of your goals with this, right?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I think I want to come right out of the gate. You told me a story. I want you to get to this story however you want. If you want to tell us a little bit about what your career was like before it, but this conference that you were at one day where you had sort of an enlightening moment. But,
right.
You know, if you want to tell me a few things that you had done before you got to that moment and sort of where you were in the world of voiceover, because you had quite a bit going on. You know, right. Tell me, yeah, go ahead with that.
Well, I started in radio in Wisconsin and moved down to Atlanta and New York and L.A. and went through the whole thing. San Francisco, about 11 years there. And when I finally returned to Milwaukee for a Christmas vacation, a gentleman approached me about putting a rock station on the air, and I thought, hey, you know, put a rock station on the air in my own hometown, that would be great.
Yeah.
So I was the first PD and then eventually the GM at WQFM in Milwaukee, and we had a lot of success for about 3 or 4 years, and then I parted company with those guys and decided to go out on my own. And that was, I think, 1974. And I got together with a friend of mine, Jerry Bryant, and the two of us started our studio together. And the first 6 months, it was pretty rough because we really didn't have any business.
Mm-hmm.
But we finally landed the big record chain in Wisconsin called 1812 Overture. And they were doing like 3-4 commercials a week, so that kept us busy. And then we landed the promoter, which was owned by the same guy. And we moved down from there to pretty much every promoter in the country doing concert spots.
Yeah.
And after a while, we started doing tours, and we did a lot of tours. I don't know how many tours we did, maybe 50, 60. And then we started doing television for the tours. So we got real busy and built a pretty nice studio on Milwaukee's East Side, which is right near the UWM. And one day Max Floyd comes along and says, "I'd like you to read some lines for WLUP." So I sure, why not? You know, so I did some of those lines. One of the lines I came up with right at the end of the session, just to be a smartass, was "Kick ass, rock and roll in the loop." And that became their billboard and their slogan. And right about that time, things just exploded. We were doing, I don't know, we were getting 2 or 3 stations a day sometimes. We got Z100 in New York, and then we signed KLOS in Los Angeles. And it just went from there until we eventually had 85 or 90 stations.
And these are some of the biggest stations.
Pardon?
These are some of the biggest stations across
the
country.
Yeah, we had stations at pretty much every major market.
Yeah.
Most of them were AORs, some of them were CHRs. But it really exploded, and it got to the point where I had 3 guys doing production, and I was bouncing from studio to studio doing the voice work. And, we exploded. We started doing all their television, all their production. And this was, I would think, around 1981, all the way through the early 90s. And it got to the point where we finally grew to a company with 35 people and 15,000 square feet of space in downtown Chicago.
That's pretty amazing.
That kind of leads up to the Conclave. And I've always been shy. I've never granted interviews or talked much about myself because I'm more of a recluse than anything, but I went into the, there was a production conference at the Conclave, and I went in, I think maybe 10, 15 minutes into it, and sat in the back, and I had my baseball cap pulled down over my face, and one by one, these guys were getting up and talking, and they were going to the front of the room, and the moderator was up there, and he was asking people, you know, where he thought imaging and voice work was going to be going. And one by one, they all got up and said, "Well, one thing is for sure, and that is we got to move on from this Joe Kelly guy." And you know, my style and my approach had apparently been associated with the '80s metal and the '80s hair bands, and this was right around the time that the grunge was happening, 1991, 92. And one by one, it just one guy after another got up, and it almost was, I almost started laughing because it was like, holy mackerel, what's going on, you know? So I pulled my cap down over my face, and I got up, and I was going to try to leave, and I kind of crouched over so nobody would see me.
Yeah.
And somebody goes, "There's Joe Kelly now." And I got a standing ovation, after which time I realized that my career as a voiceover was just about had peaked and was going downhill quickly.
Yeah.
So subsequently after that, I started losing clients, and, you know, I was losing 8-10 a month until maybe 3 years later, I was down to 10 or 12 clients.
Wow.
At first, I was hurt. I remember driving back to Chicago and going like, you know, what am I going to do? And you know, I was more worried than I was really hurt. You know, and then somebody pointed out to me, you know, look at the charts, the music charts from 10 years ago. Nobody on those charts has still got hits today. Your 15 minutes of fame is over. Get over it.
Did literally one person point that out to you? I mean,
yeah, and you know, and I actually handle it better than I thought I would. I always loved production first. I always loved sound designing, and I was a keyboard player and a composer, and I thought, well, there's other ways to make a living.
Sure.
So we built a studio in Milwaukee up the shore, and we started AV Deli, and that exploded. We had 70 releases in 5 years. And
tell me about, there was something interesting about that. At the time, what was unique about AV Deli at the time that no other service was offering?
Well, what we noticed when we were imaging all those stations, after we would mix the voice out, we had all this material.
Yeah.
Pads and beds and sounders and keyboard things and beat pads. And we would save them all up because, you know, we would use them again and again until we get tired of them, and then we'd make all new stuff. And it became clear to me that there was only Network and Omni and Killer Tracks, which were libraries on disk at the time, that just offered scores, and then there was libraries that just offered sound effects, but there were no imaging libraries. So we came out with an imaging disk called Signatures, and that did pretty well, and then another one and another one, and I think we had four or five of those. And then we started being more format specific about the kind of content that we were doing. So we like put out the X Rule series for alternative and new rock, which is really a hot series. And then we came out with classic rock discs and, you know, got into hot AC and CHR and rhythmic CHR and urban. And we even did a blues disc, a jazz disc, and country, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So we had libraries for every format, and it really took off. And it smoked for about 8 or 9 years. And then I went through a divorce. And I thought, well, I'll put the company on hold, and I moved to Phoenix and put a new studio together with three other guys called Tall Cat Productions. And then during that period of time, we just sort of focused on local business here. We're doing a lot of AVs and a lot of bands, recording a lot of bands, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, time passed and months passed, and I just AV Deli just sort of disappeared. So I decided to bring it back 18, 19 months ago, and the rest is history. It's doing real well. We're real happy.
Yeah, it's a great service.
Thank you.
I'm happy to be a client of it, and I guess contribute a little bit here and there with a couple of your guys. You have a lot of good producers there. You know, I was curious.
Yeah, well, what we've done is we've accumulated a bunch of guys who all work in their own studios. We've got a couple of guys in Marin County. We just added a guy from George Lucas's group for our CHR library. Got a guy in Paris. Willie Wells works in Woodstock, New York. He just did work on, he just engineered the last Dylan album. Mike Crank contributes a lot. I understand you're going to have him on pretty soon.
He'll be the next guest with Trevor over there at the CBS facilities in L.A.
Two AV Deli in a row.
Yeah, wow, look at that. It's a coincidence, but it's all right with me.
Yeah, thank you.
Go back a little bit, though. I want to get into more of, you know, life after a radio station in a second. But with AV Deli, I know that it got really massive. And in the beginning, especially, you said you had, 70 different released packages.
Right.
Were you doing things mostly as a sort of a buyout system at the time? You know,
it was all CD audio. Yeah. And it was, you know, we'd put a library together over probably 4 or 5 months. And I would hone it down and listen to it and work with it. And finally, I'd say, there it is. That's done. And then we'd put that out. The problem with that is that it's frozen in time.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, even though I know guys like to use a lot of stuff from 3, 4, 5, 10 years ago and some of that stuff is can be reworked and used, but things keep changing, and I sort of imagined going online at some point in time. I just didn't know logistically how we could do it. And finally, we figured out a way to do it. There's a lot of people that are doing it, but we wanted to make sure that we did it in a way that, you know, you could download 15, 20, 30 pieces without them corrupting. And as high speed became more and more popular around the country, it became easier to facilitate the idea. With dial-up, it would have never been possible, you know. And that's how the internet started.
So by virtue of the fact that people want that, you know, that high-speed access, and people want things now, and people want things updated, because I have a lot of people ask me about creating their own packages and how they should distribute it, and you have people that run, like you said, there's a lot of different monthly updated services, but then there are still people releasing these one-off buyouts.
Sure.
In your opinion, is it still feasible to make a good living releasing one-off buyouts?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so.
And tell me why. Because I get it. The whole, you know, people want stuff that is fresh and now and updated. But I have a couple that I really like. But why is it? Why does it behoove people to focus more on a monthly system, on a monthly update?
Well, I mean, for one thing, the marketplace just won't support individual releases anymore. There, to be truthful about it, when we went into business 18 months ago, there was really no reason for us to be successful because there were already enough services out there. There was no reason for everybody to go, oh, well, we'll drop this one and pick up AV Deli, because
right.
Everybody had a service and they were happy with it. So we knew that we would have to be different and better. I don't know if we've achieved being better, but I think that we certainly are right in the ballgame, and it's just very competitive. The market is probably oversaturated with services, and there's just not there's not enough of a marketplace for single individual releases.
Okay.
I don't think anyway.
Yeah, well, I mean, you run a massive company, so your opinion matters to a lot of people.
Well, if I thought there was a marketplace for cash buyout libraries, I'd go back on the internet with a service like that.
Certainly. I do some work for a competitor of yours, and, you know, it doesn't matter, but they offer they offer a few more formats than you. I guess my point is you guys have got it honed down to maybe not as many formats as I would think you would offer, but I'm sure that's by design. What have you learned about the best formats to be putting services out for, and maybe some formats that aren't worth it or just, you know, you can't profit on?
Well, for one thing, AAA is not a format you want to get involved in, because
sure.
They don't do any kind of, aggressive imaging.
Right, and there's so few of them.
Nor does Soft AC.
Okay.
You know, I mean, Sunny 102 or whatever is, you know, you could come out with a little package of about 50 wisps, and they'd have everything they needed.
Right.
So we're pretty much in the active aggressive music formats: active rock, alternative, rhythmic CHR, CHR, hot AC, even adult alternative, like stations like KFOG in San Francisco.
Sure.
That still image aggressively, but play a more adult offering of music, you know.
You know Jeff Schmidt?
Very well.
Yeah, I think he's the guy at KFOG. I think he's one of my favorite people that produces sound design.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, that's a good example of a station that's different.
But it has to be pretty much a foreground music station for people who are active radio listeners, you know.
The only thing I wanted to ask about the spoken word formats, you know, just straight up talk stations, news.
Right.
And you guys aren't really in that, right?
Well, we had a sports library for about a year, and it wasn't doing well. Nobody was using it. We had like three clients. So I started calling the sports talk stations around the country, and everybody was just either ESPN or Fox.
Okay.
And they got all their stuff from ESPN or Fox.
Okay.
So they weren't interested in any kind of, unless we would, like, you know, produce stuff with the ESPN theme. And since ESPN is doing it, why would we, you know, it just didn't seem to work. And then there were people imaging sports talk radio stations that were also imaging, you know, a CHR and a classic rock, etc. and they would kind of do the sports talk station as an afterthought. The passion just wasn't there for great sports talk imaging.
Yeah, and plus they can probably use a lot of their active rock tools to image a sports talk station. So
right,
yeah,
right.
I understand.
Well, right now, if we sign an active rock or a classic rock, and they have a sports talk AM, we let them use it on their sports talk.
Yeah, I've noticed you guys are very open with those kinds of deals.
And we did put the best part of the sports talk library into both of the rock libraries.
Yeah,
it's called All Sports. It's about 500 tracks, and it covers every sport and every drop imaginable. So that's now available in all the rock formats, you know.
I think this is a good time to switch gears a bit.
Because
sure. We did want to put a lot of focus on, the best tactics for people to utilize to get outside the station. Because at the end of the day, we all want to make a good living. We all want to keep ourselves interested. And, finding your own clients, is a good way to do that. Start with voiceover. We talked before this interview. You've given me tons of tips, but give me some of the top three, top four things that if you're a guy who's been doing a little bit of voiceover work, but you really want to go at it now. I want to tackle this thing and I want to be successful. You know, what should I be doing?
Well, first of all, I suppose you need to get an agent in today's business world. You pretty much need one in LA and one in San Francisco. One in Chicago and one in New York.
And you think that's a necessity? You think you have to?
I do.
Okay.
And I did not have an agent, ever. To this day, I've never had an agent.
You still don't right now?
No, I don't. And the reason I don't is because I'm kind of a snob. I like to do voice work for people that I decide I want to do voice work for them.
Okay.
In other words, if I hear somebody doing something and I think that, hey, I could do that and I could do it better, then I would rather approach them. I don't want somebody calling me and saying, yeah, I got you a gig, you know, it's for blah, 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 and I'll be faxing you the copy or I'll be, you know, sending the copy as a PDF attachment, and I want you to go in and read it this morning. And then I'm sitting there reading something from some business that I don't even know and I've never heard of the people and I have no connection with them. I like to have an emotional connection to what I'm doing. I like to be passionate about it. I like to be involved in what I'm doing. So I like to pick the stuff that I do voiceover work for.
But I think I'd be remiss if I didn't say that you've got a little monkey or, do as I say, not as I do situation going on here.
Right, because I don't recommend that for anybody.
Okay.
that's just the position I happen to be in at this point in my life. When I needed voiceover work and I was looking for it, I would send a demo to every creative director at every major agency in the country. And that got me a lot of business, you know, United Airlines, ABC Television. I've done, 150, 200 of those kinds of things over the years. But I just pitched it myself.
Well, why can't people do that now? Why can't I, as the fledgling voiceover artist who does have some talent, why can't I take the Joe Kelly routine and avoid the agent?
Well, because today there's so much work that goes right through the agencies. I think when an ad agency or an in-house advertising department, like the one at Walmart or the one at GE or whatever, is looking for a voiceover, they just call voiceover talent agencies and say, hey, this is what I'm looking for, and then they'll get like three or four demos and they'll pick a voice from that, which I think is probably the smartest way to go because they're in a hurry. Everybody's in a hurry today.
Sure.
And there are online sites now where you can go. I mean, if you just Google voice work or voiceover actors, all these sites come up where these different voiceovers are listed, and you can hear their demos, and you can pick a voice for whatever you've got to have done.
Mm-hmm.
But usually you have to go through an agent to do that. If I were sitting in, let's say, Cincinnati or Milwaukee or wherever, and I wanted to do voice work, I would pick the region I'm in. Let's just take Phoenix. I would hit Albuquerque. I'd hit Phoenix. I'd hit Tucson. I'd hit Las Vegas. I'd hit every ad agency in those cities. You can look them up in the telephone book, or you can look them up online, and just creative director, and send them a flash drive with a voice demo.
Now, I wanted to bring that up, actually. I've noticed you guys have done that before. this flash drive thing. I mean, it's interesting. It's pretty obvious too, but you feel strongly about that. I mean, sending CDs, not that good.
Well, the if you can afford it, the nice thing about flash drives is that people can use it after they get it.
So you're giving them a gift, kind of.
Yeah, and you put your logo on there. Steve Stone was telling me about, I think it was Steve, as to where to get them. And if anybody wants to know, they can email me, and I'll look it up, and I can pass it on to them. But right now, you can get like 50, 60 flash drives or 100 flash drives for like $8 a piece with your logo. And you only need to send out a gig or two. You don't need to send them a 60-gig flash drive.
Sure.
Right now, for example, Best Buy has got flash drive 8 gigs for $10. If you invested like, $300 in flash drives with your logo on it and send them out to 300 agencies, how are you not going to get work?
Mm-hmm.
You will, unless you're no good.
That sort of leads me to my next thing. Now, what are your suggestions for people? I'm not going to make a comment about whether someone's good or bad, but what should anyone who wants to be in voiceover do to make themselves ready to cut a demo, and how should they cut a demo, and what should the demo be like, and tell me a little bit about that prep work.
Well, the first thing I think that a person has got to master before they go into a studio is they've got to achieve a certain frame of mind, and that is one of self-confidence. One of, hey, I'm going to do it the best I can do it. If they don't like it, go jump in a lake.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have that degree of self-confidence and arrogance, because if you can go into a studio and just be relaxed and be yourself and not worry about it, fear is the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
I used to do breaks on ABC TV on Sunday night when Ernie Anderson was on vacation. And I'd see that thing, 5, 4, 3... This is ABC, Sunday Night at the Movies. If you choke up right before the... you just have to go like, Ernie said to me one time, he said, screw them, just read it, And that's what really, to me, that stuck with me my entire career, because if you're relaxed and you're having fun and you're confident in what you're doing, then you're going to be great. Just be yourself. Now, in terms of a demo, you want to show as much diversification as possible. Maybe a little radio imaging, not too much. Probably a promo. Maybe some different voices that you do.
Mm-hmm.
And, Mike Crank, in his new book, which I've almost finished, talks about looking at TV and closing your eyes and listen to the approach the voiceovers take. And normally they're very relaxed, very laid back, and just emulate that. Maybe take 2 or 3 voiceovers that you really admire and listen to them right before you walk into the studio, and just to take that approach and show some diversification and, your full range of talent. Keep it about 2 minutes and see what happens.
Let me get your opinion on something real quick.
Sure.
It's in regards to the television versus radio. I've had I've done almost 40 of these interviews now. I've had some of the big talents that do big work on TV and big radio imaging work, and there's always a major difference. When you watch TV, everything over the last couple decades has come way down to the, normal person delivery.
Right.
It's not really announcers anymore, per se. It's, you hear a McDonald's ad, it's a regular guy doing the announcer. Anyway, radio remains, car commercials still scream at you. Radio imaging, by all accounts, still wants a little bit of that pukey delivery on most formats, maybe not alt, but what is it about radio that can't or refuses or just isn't staying or kind of going along with the way TV is branding itself?
Well, I think too many program directors are misled into believing that McDonald's is a great hamburger.
Okay.
In other words, when you're program, I programmed for 13 years and always just one station. When you're programming 3-4 stations, it's difficult to be passionate about that specific lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And you just start to use formula, a lot of formulas to get things done and be able to go home at night and have a reasonable amount of stuff crossed off your list. I think that some PDs just get caught up in the idea that everything has to be homogenized and, well, we're after females, so we want to be happy. And I don't know. I don't get it either, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a good answer. I think it's, you know, there's no one person you can point the finger at. You know, it's not like one
person. I'll point the finger at somebody who's really amazing, and that's Dr. Dave Ferguson. I got a demo from him the other day, and I listened to the whole thing, and it blew me away. The guy is so fluid and natural and fun and entertaining. If you want to see how it's done or hear how it's done, just find a demo of Dr. Dave Ferguson and listen to it. Right now, in my opinion, there's nobody better in the whole industry. He is the Tetons of voiceovers right now.
I'm going to put a link on the site because, ironically, I think I had his demo sent to me recently, too, real recently. And, yeah, amazing work. But, yeah, I'll go ahead
he's
and put
also a great guy, by the way.
Yeah, I don't know him.
Too. Yeah. Pardon?
Yeah, I don't know him, but he seems like somebody I would like to meet.
Well, you know, and that's important, too. You know, he's the kind of a guy that will work with the producer and have fun doing it and loves to just throw in extra stuff and ad libs and, you know, and he's just a delight to work with, and he's a great talent. But that, to me, is the guy that I would emulate right now if I were starting out.
Next statement I make may be a little bit sophomoric, but I'm interested in your opinion or just to explain why. But you've said, you know, in any good piece of production, any sort of branding, commercial, anything, 70% of it is the writing. The writing is important. And, you know, meanwhile, you're a guy who, by all accounts, has made his living mostly in that other 30%, you know, producing it or voicing it, right? So
actually, I've done a lot of writing.
So you've done a lot of writing.
I wrote for the Rolling Stone. I wrote for the San Francisco Chronicle. I've written a couple of books, written poetry. I think writing is critical. I mean, it all starts with the writing. It actually all starts with the initial idea written down on the matchbook cover or the napkin.
Sure.
And you take it from there. Mike Crank addresses that issue in his book with a whole chapter on writing. And, it absolutely starts with the writing.
So what?
Now, I mean, obviously, if you're just doing a sweeper that's used between songs,
right,
you know,
right.
Hot 107, more music, there's no writing involved. But when you're talking about promos, yeah, it all starts with the writing.
Tell me about that, though. I agree. I was, you know, I was playing devil's advocate or whatever, but writing is key, and the best producers I know are the best writers. How does, you know, how do people get better at that? What are some of the things they can do? You know, because you got to be a triple threat in anything you do. So if you can be a great voice and you can be a great producer, but how do you become even a good writer?
Well, I think reading a lot helps. And I think, you know, we're all copycats. Everything I did, from my radio name to the way I read to the way I wrote, was all listening to other people. You know, Ken Nordine. There was a guy on WLS by the name of Joe Kelly who did all nights. And when I was up in northern Wisconsin at the very beginning and I was using my real name, which is Martin Jupp, and people are calling me, hey, Junk, you know, I went, this is not working. So I went like, from now on, I'm Joe Kelly. That was 1963. I think if you want to become a great writer, you have to read great writing.
Yeah.
And then your own ideas and your own style will evolve from that process. Another really great writer is Eric Chase, from formerly of WFLZ, who now is Chase Cuts.
Sure, certainly.
John Frost, another great writer. Listen to these people and listen to the way they write and listen to the way they twist and turn things to get you to listen. Listen to Howard Stern. There's a guy that just ad-libs writing.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's possible that being, I don't know, I hate to use the word great, I'm not, because that's a... But being a good writer, is that something that might not be that easy to actually learn, that a lot of that's inherent?
Well, I think, you know, in terms of, we're talking about radio here, I think if you're driving along in the car and you're listening to a promo, does it mean anything to you, or is it just noise?
Mm-hmm.
And I think you have to put yourself in the place of the listener and go, okay, now I'm just going to be driving along, you know, I'm going to hear, how can I sell this promotion? How can I make this idea interesting? Mike Crank gives a couple of examples of how he took really boring promotions and turned them into great promos that, you know, were compelling and that elicited responses from people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what you have to do is you have to try to, in the theater, they the biggest thing is to absorb yourself in the role so that you even begin to think that you are the character that you're playing. And I think that you have to put yourself in the seat of the person in the car and make them laugh, make them pay attention, do something bizarre.
Yeah, that book, by the way, I'll have a blog post about it. So by the time this interview gets put out, I should have a blog post up, Brain Dead Creative. It's a good book. The examples you're talking about, I think, are in the art section near the it talks about making a ticket pinata, for example, out of a U2 promotion.
Yeah.
Yeah, really creative stuff that actually started from just a single word. You know, like, how about a pinata? What? Yeah.
I should have mentioned Mike Crank is one of the truly great writers, along with Trevor Shan. When those two guys get together, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, it seems like KROQ has always fostered that sort of situation. You know, where they never just have one guy. You know, there's always
that all goes back to Kevin Weatherly, who's probably, in my opinion, one of the best PDs in the history of the industry.
Yeah, another that's a name that constantly gets brought up, and another one of those guys that I will meet. A radio professional that I will meet at some point in my life, but...
Well, you know, I've never met him myself, but I know from talking to people who have worked for him...
Certainly.
...that he's the kind of guy that just inspires creativity. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, there's certain people, like certain football coaches, high school basketball coaches. There's always that guy we remember from school or from church or from our life who inspired us. He walks around the halls of CBS and LA inspiring people. That's what he does. That's why every radio station that he programs just kicks ass.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's just because the people love working for him. And by the way, you know, when Trevor and Mike Crank get together and do writing, crazy things happen. And a suggestion, I think, for any production director at any radio station or imaging director is to take the craziest guy at the radio station, go out and buy him dinner or a pizza and have him help you do the writing.
Sure.
Because when you bounce stuff back and forth between two guys, especially after the third or fourth beer, you can come up with some really great ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, collaboration is very good.
Yeah, I agree. It doesn't really matter how great you are, especially as a producer or as a writer. You add an extra person to the mix, and it's most likely going to be better.
Right, right.
We got a few minutes left here, and I did want to focus a little bit on the actual, you know, producer. So... You know, you've been imaging a radio station for however long. You know, you finally got that gig, and guess what? Just like is about to happen to me here in a few days, another company's buying your company, and now I don't know what to do with myself. So let's talk about some main tips that you have for guys to get themselves out there as a producer to get clients, or what are the types of jobs that we can be looking for? You know, what are the types of things we can be doing?
Well, it's important to think outside the box. When we left WQFM in Milwaukee, Jerry Bryant and I left together. And we sat around for a month or two, and we had no business, and we were starting to go, maybe this thing is never going to happen. And then we started to realize that our talents could be applied to a variety. Anybody who uses audio, video, can use our skills. So back then there was no internet, but today I would certainly look at internet opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
We used to listen to the radio. We'd hear local commercials that we thought really sucked. We'd produce spec spots, go directly to the retailer and say, look, listen to these spots. If you think these are better than what you're using, let us produce your spots. And we picked up a lot of work directly from retailers. We also went to small 1, 2, and 3 shop agencies that didn't have a creative department and became their in-house creative department.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I was just going to say on that point, do you think those opportunities still exist? I mean...
They do, absolutely. Okay. Sure they do. Yeah, especially in the smaller markets. And even in markets like Phoenix, there's a lot of 2 and 3 man agencies in Phoenix and Dallas and Houston where they just don't have the people and they'd rather go out of house. They don't want to hire someone and put him at a desk and have to pay his insurance and his parking and vacation time and deal with all that. If they can go out of house to a creative guy and have him or her do the writing or, maybe they drop off a fact sheet and you do the writing and you have the copy approved and then you pick the voiceover and you do the commercial. We did that for a long time, and after a while, we had, I don't know, a dozen major clients like Keepsake Diamond Centers and Root Shoe Stores and a number of others that we picked up just that way. The other thing that I would do is I'd look at AVs, which are industrial presentations. There's a lot of that work that goes on. And what you do to get that work is you simply see what industrial companies that have in-house creative departments are in your area. For example, around the Chicago area, we had Kohler Plumbing Fixtures, GE Medical Systems, we had Allstate. So we contacted all those people with a demo of what we did and invited them down to the studio and talked with them, and we picked up that kind of business. Once we started doing television, we were doing $35,000, $40,000, $50,000 projects for all those clients.
Mm-hmm.
They spent a lot of money. You know, when GE Medical Systems comes in to do an AV, they got a budget of $50,000-$60,000 to do that.
I wanted to bring up the internet a little bit, only because
sure.
I think there's a thought amongst people that even though the internet as a whole is taking a lot of media dollars away from television and radio, and obviously newspapers have been going down the toilet, but, you know, they don't pay. I mean, that's just kind of what the general consensus is, that internet jobs just don't pay. People want you to do some audio for the website. They got $72. What can you do?
Well, we're in the embryonic stages of the development of the internet. There's no question about that.
Sure.
But, you know, maybe you take a portion of your day, just like you take a portion of your income and give it to your church or charity, you take a portion of your week or your day and you devote it to some low-income websites that you believe have a future.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you only get $50-$70, but you know when they can afford to pay you $200, and then at some point they can afford to pay you $2,000. In other words, get in on the ground floor with some websites that you really believe in. I do work for a couple of websites for very little money, just because I believe that they will be big in the near future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you on that. I wanted to get your opinion. I agree. Let's see here. I wanted to ask a couple more questions before I let you go. I will have my final
sure.
question for you, which I'm excited to hear your answer. But over with AV Deli, you know, your different studio projects, and even back to when you were, you know, in-house as a jock at a radio station, you've seen the economy go in the massive waves. You've seen it at its highest and its lowest multiple times. So we're obviously in a pretty awful economy right now. But in your opinion, you know, do we pull out of this? Do we, you know, are there specific adjustments that people should be making? Are there things we should expect to be, you know, the effects of this bad economy? Do we ever get fixed? You know, what's your thoughts on that when it comes to media?
It's funny because I've seen this coming for a long time. You know, when I was born and raised in Milwaukee, there was this area called the Valley that was just loaded with industrial places like International Harvester, A. O. Smith, Alice Chalmers. They're all gone now. In every city, that's the case. We've lost our industrial base. And we've failed to retrain those workers in computer skills, in coding and programming and computer design. And that's been a big problem. There's no doubt about it. And the economy is driven by retail. And right now, everybody's in the dumps, you know, mentally. Everybody's depressed, and people are not spending money, and that's the problem. Will we pull out of it? Absolutely. How long will it take? 8 to 10 years, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, there are opportunities there because no one's slowing down the internet, and retailers are going to continue to advertise and continue to support radio and television and the internet. And for those of us in the media, for those of us who are providing content or creating commercials and AVs and films and documentaries and whatever, we're gonna continue to be busy. We might have to work. We might have to give them a little price break. We might have to, you know, be a little less greedy. But the business is going to continue to be there.
I have a curiosity in your time, and I really just want one thing on either side. But and really, just you know, from the outside the radio station production angle, I'm sure there's been at least one thing that you did so perfect and right that you look back on and go, wow, that was a great decision. And then I'm wondering if there's something that you did that you went, wow, that was a terrible decision, if you have an example of both of those.
Well, I do, and one's personal, and in fact, they're both personal. The worst decision I ever made in my life was to try cocaine.
Okay, wow.
The best decision I ever made in my life was to believe in a power greater than myself, so that I stopped trying to control everything, that I let go. And after that, life became beautiful. Hmm. I come to work every day. I don't worry about if we get 50 clients, 500 clients. It doesn't really matter to me. I'm just here to do the best I can do, and whatever happens, happens. And what I would advise anybody who's going through a difficult time right now is to realize that you're here for a purpose, and that you are not wise enough to know what that purpose is. So all you can do is just get up every day and do the best you can, and just have faith. And that coming to that conclusion was the best decision I ever made in my life.
Wow, yeah, that's pretty good. Joe Kelly, you are the man. I've been looking forward to talking to you. I'm so glad that I finally used my my massive skills to talk you into being on the podcast. And it's been a huge value to people listening, and I really, really do appreciate it.
It was great to be with you. I have every one that you've ever done, and I enjoyed them all. And I'm honored that you'd want to talk to me.
Absolutely. And I'll thank you again. I've done it before. I'll continue to do it. AB Deli's been a sponsor of the podcast for almost since the very beginning. You like you just said, you managed your expectations with me, and I hopefully I've gotten you some traffic and some clients, but really I'm just glad you were there to just support what I do, and everybody appreciates it. Thank you so much, Joe.
Thank you, man. Take it easy.
Are you hard?
Yeah, baby. 95 will rock. 95 KGGO.
I've been listening to this radio station forever.
Thank you.
He's the idol of every woman.
Randy Hook. 94.1 JJO. 95 KGGO.
No.
New music.
Extreme Eye Radio.
I know what I'm doing this weekend.
Rock it out! Bring on the pain!
95 will rock.
We're on a mission.
Yes! New rock.
Extreme Eye Radio. 94.1 JJO.
You guys kick ass.
Close it out. Thank you, Joe Kelly, one more time. You're the man. Show notes page is going to have a bunch of links for you to check out. Obviously, AV Deli, there should be a banner for that because they sponsor this podcast. But Tall Cat Studios is Joe's deal. Joe Kelly Creative Services, there's a lot of different things you can check out. Plus, extended mix of the demos. Anyway, go on the website. It's 39th episode. Anyone who's checking this out is probably used to it by now, right? Let me just preview what's coming up. A new book was written. Brain Dead Creative. Mike Crank, Trevor Shan, the guys at CBS LA. We're talking KROQ. Believe they're world famous. Jack FM, one of the more successful Jack FMs in the nation. So we'll talk to those guys in the next episode, talk about their book. It'll be a dual interview, and it'll be the second time I've checked in with CBS LA. Anyway, there's just a humongous list of guests, I'll be honest. I think I mentioned in the intro, I try to get these out as soon as I can. Every time I think, oh, look at that, it's only going to be 2 weeks between episodes, bam, 15 things get dropped on me, some relaunch or something, and then it's 4 weeks again. So I do my best to get them out in under a month. If you have anything to tell me, you can do so on the website. There's just a contact form there. It goes right to my email. You can use that. It's probably the best way. Okay, I've got nothing else. Enjoy yourself. Bye.
This is The Producers. Have a question, comment, or concern? Email Ryan at ryanontheradio.com. The Producers. Thanks for listening.